Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to the Seahawks Man to Man podcast, powered by The Athletic. Shout out to the company. My name is Michael Sean Dugar. I'm here with my co-host, Christopher Kidd. Make sure you follow us both up on the tweet machine. You guys know where to follow me already. I'm verified, so I don't even have to read that part of the show anymore. Chris, go ahead and talk to him.
What is up, everybody? It's your boy, Christopher Kidd. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at CKIDD206, and that's CKID206.
All right. We have a special guest on this episode of Seahawks Man to Man. I'm really excited about this. Been excited about it for a couple weeks now. He covers the Vikings for us at The Athletic. He is Arif Hassan. Arif, what up, dog?
Hey man, I'm not that special of a guest. Let's
de-emphasize
that part.
Here's why we're gonna emphasize it. People who don't know, I want you guys right now to, you're listening to this show probably on your phone. I want you to open your Twitter and go follow Arif right now and thank him for being an honorary member of Seahawks Twitter. Because I don't know, can we get in that for a second? How did you become? Because you are, I don't know if you want to acknowledge it or not. You're like an honorary member. You're not like in the Seahawks medias in that sense, but you are an honorary member. And how the hell did that even happen?
Well, the first answer is I don't really know, but the second answer has to do like way back in like 2013. When the Vikings signed, actually it was even before that, when they traded for Percy Harvin, 2012, or right after 2012, so I guess in between. So, the Vikings traded for Percy Harvin. I wrote, a piece breaking down Percy Harvin, and in my usual fashion, it was like 4,000 words or something crazy like that. Cause I thought he was a fun and special player, so I wanted to talk about him as much as possible. I wrote that for Field Goals and they posted that. Well, the Seahawks just kept signing former Vikings, right? You know, like Tavares Jackson and Antoine Winfield and Kevin Williams. And so they were like, well, Arif, you should write a piece about that. And I was like, yeah, whatever, I'll do that. And so I wrote a piece. And so I just kept on writing pieces about former Vikings. And so the joke just got around that, oh, I'm a Seahawks writer now. And then, as a joke, the wildest, most expensive joke, they flew me out to Seattle for a Vikings Seattle game. They paid for it. Just a bunch of people with PayPal, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right. So, like, I can never complain, right? Because they, like, paid for a flight for me back when I was blogging before it was, like, a full-time job, right? Yeah, and so, like, I've kind of always had to, like, take it on the chin, which, like, you know, a bunch of fun tweets every couple of weeks, you know, that's definitely, like, worth it. And now, every year, or I guess every time the Vikings play the Seahawks, so every year, we've started organizing a charity drive for an organization called the Lavender Rights Project, which provides legal services and legal education to people in affected communities, so you know, queer folk or you know, trans, non-binary, lesbian, bisexual, gay, or people who you know identify out of the heteronormative spectrum, to provide them with kind of the legal resources they need, because there's a really great organization here in Minnesota, and there's not, as far as I can tell, a very similar organization that does that has the same impact. So that's important to me, and we've been able to do that for the past 2 years, so I'm really happy about that.
Man, I didn't know that the history of Arif as part of Seahawks Twitter went back that far. That's actually kind of dope. Which game did you get flown out to?
They all kind of run together at this point. it was a loss for the Vikings, but I think all of them have been. But it was a Christian Ponder game, so it must have been 2013.
Oh, is that? So Adrian Peterson was killing, I think that's at that time, right? I kind of remember that.
Well, I mean, Peterson was having a good year in 2013, but he was destroying people in 2012, was his 2000 yard season.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, wow. I did not know. I mean, it's great to have you as part of the whole, like, because Seahawks Twitter is a very strong place. Like, they just, I don't know how strong they are relative to other fan bases. They're probably not the loudest, but, man, they get things done, which is a weird thing to say about a bunch of random people.
Just a bunch of people on Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, it's really weird.
It's one of the most vocal team Twitters, for sure.
And the other reason I was excited to have you is because you wear a lot of hats for us at The Athletic. Like, don't just cover the Vikings. Like, you are AAF guy for, like, however long the AAF was a thing. And that may seem, like, irrelevant to a lot of people, but, like, man, I had to write about some AAF people and I knew nothing. Right? So I had to hit you up. I'm like, yo, tell me about, you know, this guy. And even now you do, like, a Players of the Week column. Your big board, your consensus big board before the draft. This year was like that, and Dane Brugler's what does Dane call his big thing?
The beast.
Between
yeah.
your consensus big board and Dane's draft guide, I felt like freaking Todd McShay. Like, there's nothing anyone could tell me. So, like, between having your Seahawks insights and having, you know, just the overall knowledge that you have of the NFL. Appreciate you joining us, man. So we're gonna get into one of the worst teams of football, if you don't mind.
If I'm forced to talk about the Vikings, I will.
Well, let's just talk about what's been missing with this team. Why would you point out their struggles? I mean, is it – what can you say that, this is the point that they are struggling the way they are this season? Because I remember reading a preview that you wrote. You were saying that you wouldn't be surprised if basically all the teams finished somewhere between 9-7. And it's right now it looks like the Vikings are on pace for 7-9 or 9-7.
Yeah, for sure. When I was, breaking it down, there's a lot of points of uncertainty for the Vikings, and initially they all just kind of went the other way, right? You know, you have to replace Stephon Diggs, and for the first couple of games of the season, didn't look like they had that replacement. Now, you know, Justin Jefferson's coming on. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a second. But you also have three starting corners, and they all go elsewhere in free agency, right? Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander go to the Bengals, and Xavier Rhodes goes to the Colts and is, like, playing lights out, I guess. And so, three starting corners, it doesn't matter how many draft picks or how many free agents, and they didn't bring in any free agents. If you just don't have guys with experience in a system as complex as Zimmer's, and Zimmer insisted that he wouldn't be changing the system for these guys multiple times, you're going to have a lot of struggles because it's one of the most difficult positions to learn generally, and then, you know, you hit this system, and it's already, you know, that multiplies, you know, those problems. So that was going to be an issue. The Vikings had phenomenal injury luck last year. They're one of the least injured teams in the NFL. They've been hit with the injury bug this year, plus they had a COVID opt-out from a key free agent. A lot of it's just personnel turnover. Some of it, you know, it's like it's time, right? The Vikings had a pretty good year last year, and some of that just wasn't sustainable for a lot of reasons. So that was going to come crashing down. But then there were a lot of points of uncertainty that just went the wrong way for the Vikings.
You know, it's the Seahawks are kind of unrecognizable this year in, like, a good way, in that, like, they're throwing more than they're running, and, like, that's the good way. And then the bad way is that they have Pete Carroll and they have a bad secondary. I kind of see the Vikings in a similar light. Like, it's a little bit unrecognizable to see this head coach, you know, with a bad, you know, or at least a not good defense, and that one that also traded for, like, Yannick Ngakoue. Like, what the hell? What's going on?
Yeah, and Zimmer said it, like, I've never had a bad defense, he said, when we were like, man, there's some problems here that you might want to solve. And for the most part, he's right. Like, the last time he had a bad defense was when he took over the Vikings, and they had the 31st worst defense, or the 31st best defense by, like, yards and points. And then, you know, he turned from that in 2013 to, like, 14th, right? And so that's the closest he got to having a bad defense. He had a bunch of good defenses in Cincinnati. And so, yeah, it's really unusual, but he's never had to deal with this kind of roster turnover before. And so that's a big part of it. It's just, you know, he's kind of unused to it because he coaches them all kind of the same way. But if you don't have that experience in the system, especially for these corners, that's part of it. And then, you know, you find a good rookie corner in Cameron Dancer, and then he just gets hurt, right, for two games. So, yeah, it's really unusual. He's one of the only defensive coordinators slash head coaches that has been able to maintain, you know, consistent defenses. Like, you know, you follow Ben Baldwin, obviously, you know that, like, defenses are just very unsustainable. But the Vikings have been a really weird, unique exception to that rule, where they've put together top five defenses kind of year after year. And so this is kind of a shock to everybody that it just suddenly didn't happen.
Yeah, no, when I think of some of the Seahawks, there's been some weird Seahawks-Vikings games, but, like, I thought the 2018 one where, like, I think both teams scored on defense or the Seahawks scored one of their two touchdowns on defense. I was like, this makes sense. And I think last year the Seahawks put up a bunch of points, and I was like, oh, this doesn't make sense. Like, I expect defense from both of these coaches right now, and it's very weird to see a Zimmer team and a Pete Carroll team with, like, wait, the defense isn't the strength? You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're both offensively driven teams right now, and I think one of the coaches is handling that a little bit better than the other, I would say.
Yeah, no, that's true. You know, flipping the side of the ball, you know, real quick, this is my favorite question that I ask to every guest when they cover an opposing team. Is the quarterback you cover good?
Well, you ask that of everybody, but that's like a uniquely difficult question to answer for us.
Oh, yeah,
right?
I know.
I don't know, man. I think, generally speaking, yes. I think, but it kind of depends. Like, if you put Kirk Cousins in a bad environment, he's going to be worse than most starting quality quarterbacks are in a bad environment. Like, you'd rather have a Deshaun Watson or something. You might even rather have a Case Keenum, like an objectively worse quarterback that happens to improvise a lot better. But if you put him in a really great environment, he'll be better than a ton of quarterbacks are in a great environment. And so he's very supporting cast dependent. And so when that supporting cast isn't there, say, you know, the right guard goes out to injury and you have to play apparently the worst right guard in the NFL, you know, that's going to be an issue. If you've gotten rid of, you know, either Adam Thielen or Stephon Diggs, depending on the year, you're going to struggle for a little bit before you figure it out. And so it really depends on what it means to be a good quarterback, which I've never had like a philosophical answer to that question. But yeah, it really depends on the context. And then also, like, in the final 2 minutes of a game, no. But other than that, like, it's interesting.
You know, that said, this is like a weird kind of follow-up there, but I kind of think I've only watched the Vikings a little bit this year because I feel like they keep playing when the Seahawks are playing, but it seems like if they're going to have any success turning the ship around, they almost have to, like, be a passing team? It's weird. I don't want to say, like, let Cousins cook because A, doesn't have a ring to it, and B, he's not as good as Russ, but you get what I'm getting at? Like, it almost feels like for them to fix this thing, they do have to lean on Kirk.
No, that's absolutely true, and it's weird because there's actually not a ton of in-season evidence that should be the case. Dalvin Cook is outpacing Kirk Cousins in expected points once you get rid of garbage time. The Vikings have one of the most efficient running games in the league right now. I think they're like third or fourth in expected points. And, you know, one of them is the Ravens, so they're always going to be the most efficient. You know, Cousins, you know, for the first couple of weeks, struggled so much that he had negative, you know, expected
Jesus.
Points. And he's, like, leading the league in turnover-worthy plays. But you're right. I think for any potential for the offense to consistently outscore, you know, what the defense is allowing, they absolutely need to, you know, subject themselves to kind of the higher variance that you get with passing and the greater capability of getting explosive plays, because a bunch of 6-yard runs isn't going to get you to 35 points.
Right.
You need to get, you know, some 20-yard passes in there, which they did last week, right? So that's pretty good evidence that that's kind of what you need to do. So you do need to throw the ball if you simply cannot be a ball control team, and you have to accept that you might dig yourself into a hole, and then you know that you can maybe dig yourself out of one, because Cousins, you know, for all his faults, you know, he's got a great arm, he's pretty accurate, he knows how to find deep targets. So you can dig yourself out of holes if that's the thing you have.
What would be the biggest, like, the biggest issue with, like, implementing that, like, take, like, Zimmer basically having to turn into what Pete's turning into now? Would it be Kirk potentially struggling with higher volume, or would it be him dying behind the O-line?
Well, so Kirk actually had one of the highest volumes in the league under John DeFilippo, which is one of the reasons DeFilippo got fired. But, you know, and I wouldn't say he would necessarily struggle under high volume. I think the issue with that offense was that it was just a badly designed offense, and so the fact that it was high volume was kind of incidental to that. Mm. But he's had some pretty high volume years in Washington, so I don't think it's necessarily the case that he would struggle under high volume. So I think the biggest barrier would be that Zimmer just kind of has to accept that that's kind of what the team is becoming now. Mm. And as stubborn as he always kind of seems to be, as a coach, he's always a little bit more dynamic than people kind of give him credit for. The defense has changed radically over the last, you know, 6 or 7 years that he's been a Vikings coach. And so the coverage shell has changed. The front has changed a little bit. The types of blitzes that they do have changed. Like, a lot of the defense has changed really significantly under Zimmer because he's a dynamic, adaptable coach in that regard. But his coaching philosophy always seems to be kind of the same. But it seems like he's kind of giving Kubiak the reins to be more aggressive. They called shots on like fourth down, like fourth and short. They're like, yeah, have Cousins throw it deep. Seems like the right time. And that's not something we're kind of used to seeing from Zimmer. Like, if you're going forward on fourth down, you're going to try to get that 1 yard that you need. But it does seem like he's kind of more open to it, which, again, the vibe he gives off is never that he's flexible. But he's, I think, a lot more flexible than people give him credit for.
I want to stick with the offense, and the Vikings trade away their number one receiver in Stephon Diggs, and I wanted to hear from you. Do you think that trade is proving to be the right decision? I know the record says 1-3, but looking at the production from Justin Jefferson and what Adam Thielen is still being able to do, would you say that trade was the right decision to get Stephon out of there?
I would say that for these four games that they've played, it was a bad move. I think they would have won more games. But I think that for the next 3 years, I think, given what Justin Jefferson looks like, it's probably the right move. So, I mean, and, you know, I don't want to be like too certain about that. Jefferson's had two really great games, and that's kind of what we're basing this off of. But Jefferson's looking like he can be a consistent player. And if that's the case, he doesn't have to be as good as Diggs for it to be a good trade, because of things like, you know, the contract concerns and the locker room concerns and you know, kind of all the cascading parts of a trade. And so, like, the third round pick, right? So I think that it's probably the right move to generate as many wins as possible in the future, but it is making 2020 really tough, because I think they could have dug themselves out of that Packers game. I think they could have been more competitive out of the gate against the Colts. And I think they would have won the Titans game. So, not to say they go 4-0, but they'd be much closer to winning one of those first few games, and I think they win that third game. So, yeah, it presented some challenges right away. I don't know if it's going to be good for the season, but I think long-term it's probably a good move. I don't know how good it is to add a couple more wins if you're never going to get to the Super Bowl. I think Diggs maybe gets you there, but I don't know.
Got it. And you wrote a really cool piece titled Inside Justin Jefferson's Red Hot Start, How Good Can the Vikings Rookie Be? Well, for some of our listeners that aren't subscribed to The Athletic, can you give them a little plug on how good you think Justin Jefferson can be based off just these two games where he seemed to flash something and show that, oh, this kid's got some talent?
Yeah, his start, so the first four games that he's had, is the second best start any receiver's had in 17 years in terms of their first four active games in terms of total receiving yardage. And the best receiver is Stephon Diggs. and so you have to go all the way back to Anquan Boldin, which I think people who remember watching him play remember, like, the very first, you know, him out of the gate was just remarkable. And so that's the comparison. And you take a look at all the receivers that have done about that well, and there's like 10 great hits, three like pretty okay guys, and then like two or three busts. Like, it's a really strong track record, even though it's only four games. So I still, you know, he's doing really well these past two games. I wouldn't project him to be as good as Stephon Diggs, especially this year. But I would say, you know, that he's establishing himself right now. He's currently operating as the most productive rookie receiver in the class. I would say he's on track to kind of matching what we're seeing out of Terry McLaurin, who is, I think, pretty underrated because of the quarterback he's playing with and already a pretty remarkable receiver.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And how do you think he'll fare against this struggling Seahawks defense that's still looking to find their identity? Maybe they did against Miami, but what are your expectations for him to go up against, whether it be Shaquille Griffin or if Quentin Dunbar is healthy? We'll see what happens on Sunday, or if he's going up against Trey Flowers. How do you see that playing out?
Well, I see it a lot better for him if he's going up against Flowers than Griffin. I think generally speaking, I don't know if he'll hit 100 again. That would be pretty remarkable, but I think he'll be generally pretty productive. I would estimate maybe an 80-yard game, which is, I think, already ahead of where I would have estimated, you know, a week ago. After he had 170 yards, I said he's probably going to average 45 from here on out. Don't get too excited. But now I'm getting a little bit more into it. So I think, you know, it, depending obviously on passing volume and all the other, you know, factors and all that, normal passing volume, you know, kind of normal situation, I would say that there's a chance for him to get about 80 yards. And if he gets above 100, then, you know, we can really talk about how good he's going to be.
It seems that Adam Thielen, he's also, I mean, his first game he came out and had 110 yards, six catches, and then the last game against Houston last week, he had eight catches, 114 yards. How is he handling his new role as a, I would say, the number one wideout and the leader of this wide receiving group?
Yeah, well, he's always had kind of like, he's 30, right? A lot of people think that he's younger because he broke out so late. So he's always kind of had a veteran-ish role within the Vikings receiver unit. And it was always kind of up to him to kind of calm Stephon Diggs down. So while Diggs was the number one receiver in yardage and targets and all that last year, you know, Thielen was kind of the leader of the wide receiver room, and he actually outproduced Diggs for most of their years together in Minnesota. And so he's also the number one receiver by targets and by yards. And so the adjustment's not that big for him. I think, you know, teaching a receiver is kind of maybe a new adjustment because he's always, you know, kind of developed alongside Diggs. Teaching kind of a premier receiver is kind of a different kind of role, but I think that he's adapting to it really well. And because, you know, so much of his game is built off of kind of the technical ability that he's developed over the years, and because he started from such a low floor as a technician, I mean, he was just a really bad technical receiver when he was a rookie. I think that gives him kind of a unique insight into how to kind of grow and develop. And so I think that his role, both as just kind of a general leader as well as a teacher, I think kind of really suits him well and adapts to him well And I'm kind of also reminded of 2 years ago when he set the record for most 100 consecutive 100-yard games to start a year. And so I know that, like, that kind of production, that kind of sustainability, and that level of production is something that he's kind of used to.
You know, I want to go big picture for the whole league for a second here, because I just realized how much insight you've kind of been watching with the whole rest of the league. Offensively, it feels like the entire league is on freaking fire, right? Like, with the exception of, like, I mean, even the bad teams, honestly, other than the Jets, are, like, moving the Giants, too. Like, other than the two New York teams, even the bad ones are moving the rock, right? And defenses are struggling, even, like, some good ones. Why do you think that trend is? Do you think that's just because of the lack of a preseason and defenses are behind, or is it something more?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think defenses are behind because of a lack of preseason. I think that that's a big part of it. And there's a lot more communication errors and stuff like that. I think there's a lot more blown coverages. I think that the general talent drain on defense, so it gets stronger in the trenches than the offense, which has been kind of a problem. But I think generally speaking, you know, good athletes are getting moved to receiver instead of cornerback, which is kind of the opposite of how it used to be. That plays a role. So general trends are playing a role. But I think kind of one thing that's kind of going underrated is that referees are calling fewer offensive penalties for some reason this year. So there's one less holding call per game, which, you know, that can be pretty significant depending on, you know, when you call that holding penalty on the offense, but they're calling them at the kind of the same rate on the defense. And so that's also playing a role. But I think the biggest factor is that they're just doesn't seem to be the kind of coherence on defense that we're really used to seeing that allows, you know, really strong defenses to kind of rotate and disguise and build complex coverages where they can pass people off in zones and stuff like that. But yeah, your intuition is right. The offense this year is just blazing, and I think it's going to calm down. Every year we see a slight reduction in points as time goes on, even for dome teams that are not affected by weather. And so I expect that's going to be just more dramatic this year. But, yeah, I mean, when I'm writing these pieces, I got to figure out kind of which quarterbacks to include. And it's like, well, you know, these 8 quarterbacks all had a passer rating of above 115. You're going to have to cut 4 of them, and everyone's going to be mad. So yeah. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, no, have you seen it? So with the defenses or maybe individual players playing well, I'm going to actually – let's isolate the secondary with this question. With the secondary guys that you've seen play well or, like, secondaries as a whole playing well, is there, like, some common theme? Is it the ones that have been together the most? Or is it just the guys who have this the most, like, just individual talent? Is there some theme with the defenses that have kind of weathered this offensive eruption?
I've been actually trying to look for kind of what that would be. And I think some of it is, like, the defenses are kind of built around a little bit of chaos. So, like, the Ravens, for example, are doing really well. So if you blitz a lot like the Ravens do, it's just like, well, it kind of, the coherence of the defense really didn't matter. We just had a bunch of good players. We asked them to play man coverage. We're good to go. So that helps. Sometimes you kind of luck into some talent. I think the Chiefs did that at cornerback. That helps. But, yeah, the 49ers have been together. The Colts have been together outside, you know, Xavier Rhodes, who they just added. The Steelers have had, I think, a lot of coherence together. And so they're the top defenses in the league right now. And so you take a look at the 49ers, the Steelers, and the Colts. They have a lot of individual talent. That plays a role. But, I mean, you know, the Chicago Bears have a lot of talent, and they're like 8th in points allowed or something like that. And you think they'd be a little bit higher based off of what they've done historically. The Patriots have a lot of talent. But their defenses are a little bit more complex. They require a little bit more communication. And so I think some of it is just, you know, the kind of coaching that you have available to you and the amount of time they have together. So, yeah, chemistry, I think, is kind of validating that like theory that maybe, you know, it has to do with a lack of a preseason. But I think also the types of defenses that you see getting employed kind of play a role too, because if they're just like, yeah, we're just going to throw a stick of dynamite into the offense and see what happens. If that's the defense, you don't really need a ton of prep. So that's kind of, I think, part of what we're seeing too.
As an honorary member of Seahawks Twitter, I'm sure you've been following the preseason hype with this team, was that their passing defense was going to be really good. Like, I expected them to be, like, top 10 in DVOA this year. I think they're, like, 29th through 4 games, which is god-awful. With that said, everything we're just talking about with the offense and defenses eventually catching up, is there some, like, maybe level for optimism that a Shaquille Griffin, Quentin Dunbar, Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams foursome later in the season can be potentially dominant?
Yeah, Absolutely. So that kind of stick of dynamite thing that I was talking about, I think Jamal Adams is that. And so if he's healthy and kind of consistent, right, I think that element means that you don't, again, have to worry that much about the chemistry portion of it. I think Shaquille Griffin is just fundamentally a good player. And then Quandre Diggs is fundamentally a good player. And so I think that, you know, if all of this kind of like guessing is right, you know, that there's probably going to be an increase in coherence of the defense over the year, or as the year progresses, I think the Seahawks will benefit more than most because of the talent level of the players that they have. I've got no idea how talented Trey Flowers is. Like, that's an open question to me, so who knows? But I think the rest of that group is really talented. So I think that as time goes on, they'll really, you know, mesh together really well.
Each week, Mike and I, we love to ask what other teams are doing to battle social injustice going around across America right now. We talked with Josh last week, and he mentioned that the Dolphins did a really cool social media video where they just explained what they plan on doing during the national anthem, and they actually are going to stay in the locker room and just had a powerful message. I wanted to hear what the Vikings have been or what they have done in that regard, if anything.
Yeah, I agree with you about that video. It was really remarkable that the Dolphins put together. So the Vikings, over the years, traditionally have not been a very vocal team. I don't want to say they haven't been active, because you never know kind of how active players always are unless they choose to share it. But as a team, and especially as a Minnesota Vikings organization, they just haven't been very vocal until obviously this year, because Minneapolis was uniquely impacted. And so, you know, they've done kind of the things that you expect big organizations to do. They, you know, apportioned, you know, some of the money of the owners to kind of dole out. And for the most part, they've decided kind of where that money is going to go. I don't know that they've sent it out yet, but, there's been some accounting for that. But then also, you know, there have been kind of direct liaising with the Minneapolis chief of police, you know, Eric Hendricks and Anthony Barr, who are both on the social justice committee, just kind of text the commissioner, I guess, is a thing that happens now.
Wow.
You know, that's kind of open line of communication is something that they take pretty seriously. Beyond that, Kendricks has gotten really significantly involved in an organization designed to combat recidivism, or you know, the likelihood that people will cycle back into jails again and again and again, especially when it comes to people who enter the school to prison pipeline as juveniles. And so he's working with an organization that provides like job training and resources available for people just coming out of prison, and educational resources for people that are you know, impacted by the school to prison pipeline. So there's a lot there with the specific organizations that Kendricks feels very strongly about. They're kind of continuing to evolve what they want to do and what their message is going to be. Right now, they've just kind of stood firm in terms of their demands with the state of Minnesota and the city of Minneapolis about charging the officers involved, which, you know, that's happening. So we'll kind of see kind of how that progresses forward and how the Vikings will react to that progress. But I would say, you know, the statements that the Vikings have put forth have been, I think, relative to the league, been adequate. I wouldn't say it's as powerful as the Ravens statement about kind of the specific pieces of legislation that the Ravens thought they, you know, would be effective in combating injustice. I wouldn't say they put together a ton of media that's been as powerful as what the Dolphins put together, but neither have they, I think, have fallen behind in any regard. And I think they're taking their role as a team in a community that's as impacted by, you know, the murder of George Floyd. I think they're taking that role very seriously, but they're kind of proceeding fairly cautiously.
You know, it's almost, you know, the George Floyd aspect of it, I'm not even gonna lie, I didn't even think about that until like just now. Obviously that's where, you know, he was killed in that time. Like, let's go back to May and June. Could you see like the Vikings like feeling obligated in some way to like, oh shoot, we gotta, like, this matters, we gotta do something right now because this happened in our backyard?
Yeah, well, I mean, if I'm being completely honest with you, in May, I wasn't thinking about the Vikings at all.
Right, fair enough.
I was like, wow, that Popeyes that I went to, like, every week, that burned down. Jesus.
Right.
So, like, that's what I was thinking about. But, you know, obviously, at some point, I circle back to my job, and I was thinking about the Vikings, and I was really curious because they've been so slow historically dealing with this. And, you know, they had zero players kneel for the anthem during the initial, like, Colin Kaepernick. I don't even want to call it a controversy because I think it kind of justifies some characterizations. But, you know, during all of the media and all of the activism that was occurring around Colin Kaepernick's choice to kneel, they had no players kneel. And, you know, there's no evidence that, you know, Mike Zimmer told them not to kneel or anything like that, but it's very difficult to believe that no players chose to do that of their own accord. And so they've been a very kind of buttoned up organization, and then it just kind of hits them in their backyard. And I was honestly extremely curious because I had no idea what the Vikings would do. I just knew that they would be aware, because they've got a very forward PR team, that they would be aware that they would have a kind of a unique responsibility among NFL teams to kind of respond to this. And to their credit, you know, they had a social justice committee already put together, and they gave them a lot more free rein, and they gave players a lot more free rein to express themselves. And so as one kind of example of how that's changed, they had 11 players kneel during the national anthem, you know, last weekend, which is a very weird kind of quantitative metric to use, but it is something. So, I was really, you know, curious, right, about, you know, what the Vikings would do. They're kind of steered in my eyes, the middle course of the potential directions they could have gone in. So, I guess as expected.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I would expect from any team. Outside of like the Cowboys, I think Jerry Jones would act like it wouldn't exist. But yeah, it's less than obviously a lot of people would want, including myself. But you know, I understand it's a process. But yeah, that is when you're a team like Minnesota, like right at the heart of whatever the whole country is like. Your own city is burning down. Like yeah, you gotta do something. So you're under your unique microscope there. I want to pivot to one more football question. Actually, a couple before we get out of here. We always do an over-under with all of our guests. Chris put me in charge of the over-under this week, so we'll see how it goes. I'm going to go with this. Let me know what you think. Over-under, 115 total yards for Dalvin Cook.
Don't forget that
half. 115 and a half. Let's go with that.
Oh, yeah, 115.5. Yep. I go over. The Vikings just lean on him so much. You got 181 yards week three. He hit the over on 115.5. Week four, it's something that they feel, you know, really significantly important about. So they'll find him some way to get the ball. So I'll say over.
All right, Chris. That sounded good, right, Chris?
Sounded good.
115 and a half?
We'll see what happens. Right now, the Athletic staff is 1-2 because Josh, he went with Fitzpatrick going with the over on 360 and a half passing yards. He only had 315. We shall see what happens come Sunday night.
If anyone wondering, I put the over under so low just because the Seahawks have been kind of shutting down the number one running backs.
Yes.
So I'm kind of anticipating that trend continuing. I think they're like top eight or so in rushing defense DVOA. So they're pretty good. Last thing, Arif. Actually, two last things. One, how stressed are you going to be deciding which team to root for? On Sunday night. Let's start with that. Like, is this a tough time for you here? Like, is the love of DK Metcalf going to conflict with the love for Adam Thielen? Like, how is that going to go on Sunday night for you?
I'm not going to have any problem at all with any of this.
All right, the last thing. Man. Give us a prediction. Who you got? Give us a score.
Seahawks by like 10 or something. I don't know.
Seahawks. Right? I think that covers. What's that? You know the spread, Chris, on top of your head? No.
Yeah, I can look it up. The spread for this week.
I think it's like 7.5. I think.
Oh, wow, really?
It's actually 7.
Wow.
Oh,
that's,
wow.
That's a
you
lot.
Can push.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Arif, we appreciate you joining us, man. Again, everyone listening right now, take out your phone, go to Twitter, follow. not just because for the Seahawks Twitter aspect of it. Again, I mentioned all the things, all the hats Arif wears for us, man. It's great. It's great stuff. Really knowledgeable. Makes you. I told somebody earlier today before we had him on the show. I said I learned something every time him and Ben Baldwin write something. I learned something. Whether I agree or not, it's whatever. I learned something though. It's one little thing. So I appreciate you joining us. Are you real quick? Are you verified on Twitter?
Yeah, I am.
Oh wow, Chris, that's another guest that is verified on Twitter, and that's Wow, you're on your. What's your Twitter, man? I've been shouting it out. Let people know where to follow you.
Yeah, it's Arif Hassan NFL. You know, the name is not pretty typical for people, so I'll spell it out: Arif Hassan NFL. That's it. And just as a side note, I've been verified for like years now, so it's no big deal.
Wow. Yeah. Well, we're trying to get Chris verified here. He's the only one. We're working on it, man. But thank you so much, man. Appreciate you. Thank you guys all for tuning in to the Seahawks Man to Man podcast. We will catch you guys on Sunday night after, according to Arif, the Seahawks beat the Vikings by 10 or something. We're out.